Good mornings, I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, because newborns don't come with owner's manuals, Hancock Public Health is set to launch a new program called Family Connects, supporting families in the early weeks after bringing home a new baby. Also this morning, if you're looking for some good news in the category of money and finance, here you go. As the midpoint of 2026 approaches, many consumers continue to demonstrate strong credit performance even in challenging times. We have results of the latest TransUnion Consumer Pulse study. And we have details on upcoming programs and activities in the month of June at the Findlay Family YMCA. Jerry McNamee will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, June 16th, 2026. So in state news, did you hear Ohio Governor Mike DeWine yesterday signed Senate Bill 450? Was it yesterday or day before yesterday? Anyway, Governor DeWine this week signed Senate Bill 450. That is the state's $3.7 billion biennial capital improvements budget. This is where they fund all kinds of pet projects in counties across Ohio. It allocates $2.7 million in this latest capital improvement budgets bill, $2.7 million to community projects across Hancock County. And that would include, I've got the list here, $50,000 for the Children's Museum for improvements. Let's see here, $300,000 for pond improvements, the Hancock Park District. Gets that money. Genera Arlington Park Safety and Connectivity, $255,000. $250,000 for the Findlay Green Space Improvement Project. $220,000 for the Macomb Griner Park Amphitheater. $210,000 for the Mount Blanchard Community Pool Improvements. $150,000 to the Boy Scouts for the Dan Beard and Boone Cabin Project, $100,000 for the Findlay Discovery Play Area, and $1.2 million for the Findlay Defense Incubator. That is something championed by Representative Ty Matthews, $1.2 million. So $2.7 million in funds coming to Hancock County out of the $3.7 billion in the entire package. Also, I thought it was kind of interesting, and this will apparently impact Hancock County, positively impact Hancock County. All of Ohio's 76 state parks are going to get a share of $265 million set aside for modernization and improvements in the state parks. So that was one of the other provisions. I don't know what specifically the funds will be used for at Van Buren State Park, but it says all of the Ohio state parks will get some of that money. So I guess we'll stay tuned and find out. But kind of interesting there, in case you missed that story. A couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This also I saw on the state newswire. And if you have ever enjoyed Cheryl's cookies, they are absolutely delicious in all of their various varieties. The founder, Cheryl Krueger, has passed away following a battle with Parkinson's disease. Her family confirmed that Cheryl passed away peacefully early Saturday at the age of 74. She built the multi-million dollar Cheryl and Company brand after launching with a single storefront in the Columbus area in 1981. And like I said, if you've ever had Cheryl's cookies, you know how good they are. So sad news indeed. I thought this was kind of interesting. Some research that I said, scientific research, as I was perusing the newswire, and a new study suggests, now this is important research, a new study suggests that a brain chemical deficiency may explain why some teenagers are inclined to do dumb things. Now, this is research that the world needs. a brain chemical deficiency may be why some teens are inclined to do dumb things. Researchers reported in the journal Nature Communications that risk-taking teens might be compensating for low levels of dopamine in their brains. Dopamine has nothing to do with being a dope, except in this case, apparently. The lead author of the study from the University of Pittsburgh says the results show that for some teens, risk-taking may act as a way to get the system going when dopamine levels are low. All right. Study found that teens who had lower levels of dopamine were most likely to... Well, and this is the serious, they're most likely to try substances like marijuana, alcohol, and so on. So there is obviously a serious implication here. As the teens in the study got older, their dopamine systems matured and substance use tended to decrease. So that's the good news, I guess, in that study, is that if your teens are doing dumb things today, that doesn't necessarily mean that they will be doing dumb things their entire lives. In other words, they will grow out of it. But interesting. Interesting. Speaking of unique studies, interesting scientific studies, I saw this and my first reaction was, what possible use could this study serve? What possibly could be useful about this study? But researchers in Spain and Japan, working jointly, have discovered that people, human beings, consistently move counterclockwise when they walk. People move counterclockwise when they walk. The study tested hundreds of volunteers, and this is regardless of whether they are left-handed or right-handed, you know, left brain dominant or right brain dominant. It had no bearing on cultural background, had no bearing on this. They tested hundreds of volunteers across different settings, from laboratories to schoolyards to public parks. And the strong bias found in nearly all people hints at some sort of asymmetry in the biomechanical level. This is according to researcher Claudio Feliciani at the University of Tokyo. That name sounds like somebody who would work at the University of Tokyo, doesn't it? The pattern appeared in Japan despite opposite pedestrian norms from Spain. And even among kindergartners, at the youngest ages, people tend to walk counterclockwise. Now, again, and researchers can't explain this. It seems to be a universal tendency, but they have no explanation. They say most animals in the animal kingdom have no directional preference, but we prefer to move counterclockwise. And here's why this is significant. They say the findings could impact understanding of crowd behavior, like, for example, emergency evacuation planning. And when I read that line, suddenly the light went off. Think about this. If you're sitting in a theater or, someplace like that, and they say, note the emergency exits just in case, where do your eyes immediately go? To the left or to the right? Counterclockwise or counterclockwise? And I have to admit that I have done this, sitting in a theater or whatever, and you say, note the emergency exits. Immediately, my mind goes to the left, counterclockwise. That's the first one that I notice. And that would probably be the way that I would go. And so really interesting research, again, when it comes to crowd control and evacuation planning, knowing that people have a tendency to move counterclockwise, I can see where that would be useful, but amazing science there. I thought it was amazing. But for all of that amazing science, this day's news of most lasting significance could be this. As the late Paul Harvey was very fond of saying, this day's news of most lasting significance could be this. A blueberry size thermometer. Thermometer, the size of a blueberry, could soon give doctors a look at body temperature from the inside. And their patient's body temperature from the inside. Researchers at MIT have unveiled a swallowable, that's a mouthful early in the morning, swallowable temperature sensor this week. It sends readings from inside the gut where doctors can get a closer look at the body's core temperature. The device can help spot fever, infection, or dangerous drops in body temperature earlier than traditional body temperature measurements. It has been successful in animal testing, but still has yet to be tested in humans before it can be adopted in for use in hospitals, doctor's offices, that kind of thing. But a swallowable body temperature sensor that could help detect issues in patients that much sooner. That is amazing science. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny today with increasing clouds and a high in the 70s. Showers and storms possible tonight, low in the 50s. Justin Hendren has officially been sworn in as the city of Findlay's next chief of police, taking over from James Mathias, who retired. We spoke with Chief Hendren after he was sworn in and asked him about his remarks that he made after he was sworn in, when he said that people demand accountability from the department and it begins with him.
And you mentioned the word accountability a few times. You said it begins with you. Talk a little bit about that.
You know, it just in this job, our community demands accountability from us. So it's just one of the things that I choose to focus on, is making sure people are doing the things right in the right way.
Chief Hendren began his law enforcement career with the Findlay Police Department in 1999. Learn more about him and see some pictures from his swearing in this story on our website. Community leaders in Toledo are responding to the Old West End Festival shooting, with the mayor calling for greater accountability for parents.
A proposal from the mayor's office that would increase the pressure on parents to keep their kids in check. Toledo Mayor Wade Kapsakavich says the ordinance would allow the city to assign special safety zones. Those zones would give the city certain powers to enforce how young people behave and holding their parents accountable.
WTOL 11's Heather Pauloff reporting. The Findlay-Hancock County Community Foundation has announced the free admission pool dates for its Fun for All series of free community events. The Community Foundation says, as part of their Fun for All series, they're excited to announce free admission at Riverside Pool in Findlay, as well as Arlington Swimming Pool, Macomb Pool, and the Village of Mount Blanchard Pool. There's a total of 12 free admission dates, and you can see them listed in this story on our website. The foundation points out that they are subject to change based on weather conditions. The Community Foundation says each pool received a Fund for All grant to make the free days possible, and thanks them for partnering with them. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
I remember one of the first lessons that I learned when my kids were very young, my kids were born many, many years ago, was that infants do not come with owner's manuals. They don't give you a whole lot of instruction when they hand you your newborn and say, here you go. And with that in mind, Hancock Public Health is getting set to launch a new program locally. It is called Family Connects, supporting families in those early weeks after bringing home a new baby. Laura Reinhart is with us. She is director of nursing at Hancock Public Health. And Family Connects, this is actually a statewide program, right, that is about to launch locally. Tell us more about this.
Correct, Chris. This is a statewide program throughout the state of Ohio put through to us by the Department of Children and Youth. And you're correct, Chris. Being a new parent of a newborn can feel exciting, but it can also feel overwhelming.
Yes.
Those first few weeks of bringing your baby home can have big questions. And also there's new changes. There's also new routines, but you don't have to figure it out alone. Family Connects Ohio is here to help by offering a new newborn visit in home by a registered nurse coming out to your home to help you along.
So how does this work, and what types of things can the nurse help with? What do you hope to gain from this?
Yes, so this is a safe, free, and voluntary registered nurse visit into the home. Our goal is to get into the home around 3 weeks after having the baby. And what you can expect from the visit is a registered nurse coming out to your house at no cost to the patient or the family, regardless of insurance status and regardless of income status. So we are able to come out to the home. And what you can expect from that home visit is an infant exam. So we'll do a physical exam to check the baby's weight, vital signs, and overall health, and also talk about feeding support, so guidance on breastfeeding and pumping and bottle feeding. We will also talk about maternal recovery, giving tips for healing after childbirth and caring for yourself. Also talking about emotional well-being of the parents and of the family unit, and talking about sleep and routines, and also give any referrals to any local areas if need be.
So why is it important for this to be an in-home visit as opposed to taking the child into like the family doctor, or even the health department, or so on and so forth? Because I can hear some people in today's day and age being a little skeptical about having someone from a public government entity coming into my home. You know what I mean?
Yes, I totally hear that, Chris. The goal of doing it in-home is meeting the families and the patients where they're at. We don't want people to have to load up their newborn and bring them into the health department. We want to make this as easy as possible. And don't worry, there's no need to have like a perfect home. There can be things, there can be things on the floor. There can be things all around. We don't want you to clean up for us. We want to meet you where you're at. And we also still are encouraging to go to your pediatrician appointment, like that first week after being born, for the newborns. And we're also still encouraging for the patients to go to their obstetrician appointments about that 6 week postpartum. This is a supplement to those already in place systems of care. But this is just another resource, because we recognize in that between that 1 week of that pediatrician appointment and that 6 week OBGYN appointment, there can be questions. And we want to be there to help that transitional phase and help the family unit together.
I wanted to ask you about that, too, because so often we talk about the importance of prenatal care when, for expectant mothers. And it certainly is very important. But quite often we do overlook the idea of postpartum care and following up after the baby is born. Talk a little bit about, from the health standpoint, why it is so important for these follow up visits.
Yeah, so it's important from the maternal side of it. So talking about maternal well-being. So we're also talking about checking on how your feelings are, including signs of postpartum depression. We are also checking vital signs for mom, because high blood pressure can be evident in the postpartum period. So catching those signs early leads to better outcomes.
And again, following up, this is not a comprehensive follow-up, but it is available for those. I would imagine the biggest concern are those individuals who don't have insurance or would not ordinarily maybe prioritize those follow-up visits with a pediatrician or with an OBGYN.
Yes, you're correct, Chris. But we want to make sure that we're making this available to all, as this is a universal model, meaning that we want to go to those individuals, but we also want to go to the individuals who do have access to insurance, who do have access to seeing their pediatrician and to see their obstetrician. But we just want to make sure this is universal and that make sure that everybody receives the same care across the board, regardless of insurance status or income status.
Now, as we mentioned, this is a statewide program that is being rolled out locally. It's also in the process of rolling out elsewhere across the state. What is kind of the timeline on this? Because is this available now, or it soon will be, is my understanding, right?
Yes. So actually, we just scheduled our first in-home visit yesterday. So we are able to start taking referrals. So our goal is to see newborns about 3 weeks postpartum. And how you can get signed up with our program is you can call here at the health department. We can take care of you just if you call our main number, if you call 419-424-7105. That's our main number, and go to the nursing line. We can schedule you an in-home visit, or you can go to the Help Me Grow website through the state of Ohio to get signed up that way. And like you had said, we are one of many other health departments throughout the state of Ohio who have this program. So Wood County has this program all the way up to Lucas County, and then all the way down to southern Ohio and over by Cleveland area as well.
And again, just to reemphasize that there are no income requirements or restrictions as far as that. This is open to all new families, new babies coming home.
Yep, all families with new babies coming home. So another example would be if grandparents are taking in a newborn baby for certain different reasons, mm-hmm. or, you know, aunt and uncle are taking in a newborn baby. It does not have to be the birth parents to have this newborn home visit.
Okay.
So it can be an adoptive situation as well.
Okay. A very important point as well. And again, as you were saying, no worries, no need to be concerned about appearances, say, because that I think is the other thing that might keep people from say, I'm not sure that I want people to come. And certainly when, again, thinking back to when we were new parents for the first time, I'm not sure that I would have wanted to invite anyone in given the state of disarray of our home in those first few weeks.
Oh, yes, I totally hear that, Chris. I am a mom of three, so I definitely echo those experiences. So all of our registered nurses are also parents. So we all recognize that it's chaotic those first few weeks and few months of bringing home a baby. And we recognize that. And that is not why we are there. We are there for the newborn. We are there for the family unit. We are not to look around and check for bottles lying around and things.
We've got a link on our webpage for more information about the Family Connects program that is being launched here in Hancock County through Hancock Public Health. You can go to goodmornings.net and learn more about it. And once again, Laura Reinhart, Director of Nursing at Hancock Public Health, with us this morning. Laura, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Well, if you're looking for some good news in the category of money and finance, here you go. As the midpoint of the year approaches, many consumers continue to demonstrate strong credit performance. There are a couple of asterisks to that statement, of course, and joining us this morning with results of a new TransUnion study on how consumers are faring in today's credit market is the head of global research and consulting at TransUnion, Charlie Wise. What are some of the key findings, Charlie, in this Consumer Pulse study you are putting out here? What jumped out at you?
So the headline of that really is around consumer optimism. How are consumers feeling about their household finances? And while consumers continue to report a lot of concerns about inflation, about interest rates, about a possible recession, the good news is that a majority of consumers, about 55%, say that they're optimistic about their household finances over the next year. Hmm. And that 55% level is really consistent with what we saw at the same time last year. So consumers are holding their own. The headwinds, they're still managing their way through it, and they're optimistic that their household finances are going to be in good shape over the next year.
So as we mentioned, for the most part, consumers continue to demonstrate strong credit performance. Overall, what's the takeaway in terms of how consumers are faring from a consumer credit perspective?
Sure. And we track consumer credit behavior literally every day. And that's a key piece of what we're seeing is on consumer credit, the most widely held credit product are credit cards.
Right.
And consumers are doing a pretty good job of managing their credit cards these days. The average balance per consumer on their credit cards is up only slightly over the past year, about 2.3%, less than the rate of inflation. So they're not overextending the amount of credit card debt that they're carrying. And even better news is that the late payment rate on credit cards has held very steady over the last couple of years. We're not seeing an increase in late payments, and consumers are not racking up credit card debt, which is a good sign that they're using credit responsibly.
That is certainly encouraging. You mention credit cards, obviously the big consumer vehicle, the credit and debt vehicle. With respect to that, the question always cycles back to interest rates. Are those a concern for consumers, and how are interest rates impacting their both their credit usage and their future spending plans?
So interest rates are a big factor if you're going to buy a vehicle, if you're going to buy a home. So interest rates are going to impact your auto loan and mortgage loan, the amount that you pay each month, because interest is a big piece of that payment. And so what we've seen is that the current interest rates are certainly proving to be problematic in terms of consumer demand for those products. But on the flip side, it's less of a concern, it's less of a consideration when it comes to credit cards or unsecured personal loans. The reality is interest rates are already pretty high on credit cards. An additional 1% either way doesn't make a big difference.
Fair
and
enough.
Consumers using their credit cards.
Yeah. Is it the same for inflation concerns? I mean, do those two things go hand in hand?
Inflation concerns really are around, are my future finances going to be negatively impacted? Am I going to all of a sudden have to make trade-offs because the things I need to spend money on, gas, groceries, etc., are those going to put a squeeze on me? And so there's a lot of inflation concerns out there that consumers express. But the good news is, the counterbalancing good news is these days, the employment situation is really pretty stable. We have not seen material increases in unemployment rate, in layoffs. And the jobs report that came out last week, 172,000 jobs, pretty good considering all the headwinds.
Yeah. Speaking of everyday expenses, as you referenced there, what are the everyday expenses that consumers find least affordable that are most impacting their budgets?
Sure. Not surprising, top of the list is gasoline.
Sure.
And, you know, anytime someone pulls into a station and sees a number starting with 4 or 5 on the prices, they kind of gasp. Gasoline is top of the list, followed closely by dining out, travel, groceries. So those are the things that are really on top of people's minds. The things that have seen the most significant price increases in recent months, as well as the things that consumers, frankly, gas, groceries, they spend on those things every week, sometimes every day.
So as you analyze all of this data, as you look at all of this, for consumers, what is the message? What is the best strategy for consumers to make use of their credit?
Credit is an important tool, particularly if you want to make those big purchases, buy a home, buy a vehicle, but also the flexibility to have a credit card to be able to meet your everyday spending needs and maybe even use it if you have an emergency, like in something breaks in your house, your vehicle breaks down, your boiler breaks down. Having access to credit is an important enabler for consumers. And to get good credit, you need to make sure that you're managing your credit report, your credit score, through good, consistent behaviors.
That was actually going to be one of my questions, too. So let's go there. Why is it important that people regularly check their credit report, check their credit score, and what is the best way to improve that score?
Yeah. So it starts with checking your credit, knowing what's on your credit report, knowing what your score is. Lots of places that you can get access to that information for free. TransUnion.com is a terrific resource, as well as others. But know what your starting point is. Know if your credit standing is good, if your credit score is, say, above 700, you're in pretty good shape. Keep doing what you're doing. Make those on-time payments. Don't rack up a lot of credit card debt. If your credit score is not so good and you want to buy a home, buy a vehicle in the next year, you want to get your credit score up, it starts with making on-time payments every month. Those timely payments, even if it's just the minimum on your credit card, that goes a long way to helping you build your credit over time. And get your credit card balances at a level below 30%. Your balance is a percentage of your credit limits. Get or keep that at below 30%. That is an important tool to help you improve your credit and get you in that good to excellent credit range. So on-time payments, get your credit card balances under control. And that's, I think, an important tool for consumers.
Yeah. Let me kind of flip this around a little bit. Look at the other side of this coin. What is the message for creditors? How can lenders adapt their approach to better support consumers in the current environment, while at the same time, obviously, they want to make sure that they are extending credit responsibly?
It's really important. We talk to lenders every day, and they all want to grow. They want to extend credit, but they want to make sure that they're doing it responsibly. They keep asking, like, we feel pretty good, but is the other shoe about to drop?
Yeah.
It all comes down to the data. It all comes down to understanding not just what's happening in the market, but each consumer. Are they in good shape? Are they managing their credit responsibly? How are they handling things? And so that's where they really lean into data and analytics to help them make the right decisions to make sure that they're giving consumers the credit they need and doing it in a responsible way.
Once again, TransUnion Head of Global Research and Consulting, Charlie Wise, with us this morning talking about their latest Consumer Pulse study and how people are faring in today's environment. You have the full study published on your website, correct?
We do. TransUnion.com is a great resource. You can get access to this report. You can also, through TransUnion.com, get access to your credit report, your credit scores, lots of tips and tricks on how to improve and maintain a good credit score. It's really a good place for a lot of those resources to help consumers get educated and know where they stand.
Never been more important than it is right now. Charlie Wise, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We begin this morning in Phoenix, Arizona, just south of Phoenix, actually, where the Arizona Department of Public Safety says last week they pulled a woman over for speeding on State Route 347 in Pinal County. Driver was clocked at 108 miles an hour. 108. Now, I don't know what the speed limit is on State Route 37 in Pinal County, just south of Phoenix, but I'm guessing it is significantly lower than 108 miles an hour. That's what they clocked at, 108 miles an hour when she was pulled over. What makes this story worthy of the broken news is the excuse that she gave when cops asked her why she was going so fast. And, you know, police, they've heard it all. They've heard every excuse, but this one is unique. She told troopers that she wanted to get home in time to watch Love Island. She was afraid she was going to miss her favorite reality TV show. Got to get home in time to watch Love Island. The driver, who was not identified in the report, was arrested for criminal speeding and reckless driving. Her vehicle was put into what authorities called car jail for 20 days. In other words, she car was impounded for 20 days. But at least she wasn't She wasn't taken to jail. I don't believe it doesn't say her car was taken to car jail, but she was released. No word on whether she got home in time to see Love Island. But for the next 20 days, she's not going to have to worry about missing the show because she ain't going anywhere. Let's see here. Speaking of people doing dumb things in traffic, a 54-year-old Sarasota man ran a stop sign earlier this month, just after midnight, drove his 2009 Ford F-150 completely through the exterior wall of a home and into the bedroom of the 62-year-old resident. The truck, it says here, the truck pinned the sleeping homeowner beneath it. Can you imagine waking up and said, there's a truck on top of me? One minute I'm just laying in bed snoozing, and the next minute there's a truck on top of me. That would be a little disconcerting. Fortunately, emergency crews rescued him with non-incapacitating injuries. Florida Highway Patrol found no impairment, but suspects distraction might have been, driver distraction might have been a factor. And, of course, drowsiness. It was just after midnight. Anyway, a neighbor of the man whose home was crashed into, a neighbor said similar incidents have occurred previously in the area, prompting residents to install wooden posts to try and keep cars from reaching the homes, and that has proved to be ineffective. The county also had placed reflective warning signs after earlier complaints, because apparently there's a curve in the road and people are missing it. Now, residents in the neighborhood are advocating for more substantial physical barriers. They want to put up like concrete walls. If you're going to hit something in a concrete wall, not our home, I guess. According to the Storefront Safety Council, vehicles crash into U.S. buildings roughly 100 times a day. You believe that? We had a rash of those locally about a month or so ago. I had no idea that it was this common. 100 times a day, stop sign violation charges are pending against the driver who was uninjured. Yeah, that's running a stop sign. I guess if you're going to run a stop sign, go big or go home. And sometimes the stories of traffic incidents don't involve cars. Authorities in California are investigating a skydiver sighting by a pilot on final approach into LAX. That would be a little disc. If you're flying a plane, you're approaching for a landing at Los Angeles International Airport. And I know traffic in LA is crazy, but generally, if you're coming in to land an airplane, you expect kind of a clear path. But no, they saw a skydiver at about 4,000 feet. A Gulfstream jet pilot reported a potential skydiver crossing in the plane's path on Sunday afternoon. The pilot told Tower Control that someone in a wingsuit was at an elevation of about 4,000 feet. The FAA reported a skydiver in the area west of the 605 freeway, north of the 105. The L.A. County Sheriff's Department sent out a helicopter to the area, but did not find anyone matching the description in the air. Although I'm thinking, he wasn't like suspended in midair. By the time they got out there, I'm guessing he had landed. He wouldn't have been in the air at that point. Just in case, they notified other pilots and potential skydivers in the area. Man, I've never understood people who skydive to begin with. I just don't get the idea of jumping out of a perfectly good airplane, but I really don't get the idea of jumping out of a perfectly good airplane into the path of another airplane. It does seem like a dumb thing to do. Crazy. And a couple of other stories here. that I think are worthy of the broken news because they were sort of eyebrow raising and interest, not necessarily dumb criminals or anything like that, but definitely eyebrow raising stories in the broken news. A national poll out earlier this week finds that phone tracking is following many kids well into adulthood. Now, if you have kids and you have a phone, you probably have, many parents do, have a tracker app where you can check in and see where they're at so you make sure that they're not doing something that they're not supposed to or they're not someplace they're not supposed to be and so on. But research at the University of Michigan says that more than half of parents, 52%, are still tracking the location of their adult children after they turn 18. They were looking at adult children between the ages of 18 and 25 and found that more than half of parents are still tracking their kids' locations. Now, most parents say they do it for safety or in the event of an emergency. Nearly one in four parents who track their adult kids say checking the app makes them anxious. And researchers say constant tracking can also get in the way of young adults learning to manage their own lives. You want to know why kids today have trouble adulting? This is one reason. I don't know that I would ever do that to my kids. What I would be worried about is my kids tracking me. once they reach that age where they can figure it out, and you know that kids are more savvy with technology than adults are, my kids may be tracking me now. I would not even know. I would not even know. That's more concerning to me. I'm not sure I want my kids to know what I'm up to all the time. Know what I mean? And finally, in the broken news this morning, you may suspect who your most annoying coworkers are, but Pankaj Tanwar now has the data to prove it. He is a tech worker in India who tells Business Insider that he had a great idea recently to use his wearable health tracking device to measure which of his colleagues was stressing him out the most. I love this. So what he did was he kept track of all of the interactions that he had with coworkers at work. He tracked the individual, the time of their interaction, and so on and so forth. And then he cross-referenced that with the data on his smartwatch with respect to his heart rate and his anxiety level, his stress level, and all of that, that his smartwatch data collects. And he corresponded that. He cross-referenced the times of his interactions with the times of his stress levels spiking and his heart rate spiking. And he figured out what his most stressful work interactions were. He said, "We were all joking in a meeting about how draining some of our coworkers are, and it hit me, what if I could actually build something that tells me who is stressing me out?" As for whether the results of the experiment surprised him, Mr. Tanwar tells Business Insider for the story, "To be honest, not really." It really did not surprise him learning. He didn't say, and the story doesn't identify which coworkers were the most stressful workers. But when asked, he said, "Yeah, the results were really not all that surprising." I think that's a great idea. Although, again, I'm not sure I would want to know if I am the worker coworker who is stressing other people out. You know, I mean, I'm not sure I would want to know the results of that among my coworkers. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hi, I'm Josie. My daughter turns 5 today. Blow out the candles. I'm also an Ohio State Highway Patrol trooper. When you move over and slow down, you're not only giving me room to work, you're making sure I can get home to celebrate with my daughter.
Roadside workers have lives and families, but when they're on the job, they put it all on the line to protect and serve us. When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Brought to you by ODOT, USDOT, NHTSA, and ODPS.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is an interesting YouGov poll. Finds 65% of Americans enjoy board games. When was the last time you played a board game? Sat down with the family, have family game night, broken out a board game. 65% of Americans in this survey say they enjoy board games. 21% say they love them. 44% say they like them. Only 6% dislike board games. And 29% remain neutral on the idea of board games. But 65% of Americans say they enjoy just good old-fashioned board game. And you know, we're talking old-fashioned board games. It turns out that Monopoly is the number one board game. 53% say they play it many times. Checkers is actually number two at 46%. So that's definitely old school. However, despite the fact that we enjoy board games, very few of us actually regularly play board games. 22% never play. 48% play rarely. Just 28% say that they play monthly or more often. Younger adults, this was the surprise to me, younger adults show greater enthusiasm. 28% of those under the age of 30 love board games compared to just 12% of seniors. And I would have guessed that would have been the other way around. But I'm suspecting that it's kind of a pushback against the always online, fully digital society, that there's something very nice, very reassuring, comforting about pulling out an old-fashioned board game like Monopoly or Checkers or whatever it might happen to be. Modern games, we talk about old-fashioned games being more popular. Modern games remain a very niche something very niche is what I mean to say. 76% say that they have never played Catan or Ticket to Ride or any of those newer board games that come out. They prefer the older ones. Old school. And as for whether it's important to win, I mean, if you go in, are you competitive when you play these board games? Only 13% say winning matters. That's 19% among young adults and 19% among Republicans. I thought that was kind of interesting. They broke it down by political preference. But yeah, winning is not the idea. It's just playing the game is where they find enjoyment. And Americans play board games less than mobile games, but similarly to computer or console games, like the PlayStation 5 or, you know, whatever. So we don't play board games as often as we do on our phones, but we play them more often than we play games on the computer or on a console. I just thought that was kind of interesting. And again, the part that really jumped out at me was the fact that younger people enjoy board games more often than older Americans. Time to get an update on what's happening at the Findlay Family YMCA. Lots of stuff coming up here very soon. Jerry McNamee is with us this morning with an update. You got a big event coming up for youth here in the not-too-distant future. Give us all of the details on this.
Yeah, we have our youth triathlon. Our registration's open now. We took a year off. We ran it for a few years, and then last year we took a year off. And it's coming back bigger and better this year. So it's July 25th over at Riverside Park. Registration's open now. And if it's something that you kind of want to dabble in or see if your child may be interested in, we offer clinics. That registration's open as well. Those are $5, member, non-member. It doesn't matter. But $5 to come try it, see what it's about. All the triathlon distances are age appropriate. It goes anywhere from anybody that can, if you're 4 years old and you can swim 50 yards and bike a mile and then run a mile as well all in one time, you can come do this. But we go all the way up to age 18. So our age groups are 8U through 18U. And it'll be a great time. It's early in the morning. It's a great time to have people come out and do things. And even if you're just interested in a triathlon, this would be a good place to start, but it'd also be a good place for you to come cheer or do some volunteer work as well.
And so, just great opportunity to get kids active and, you know, outdoors. I mean, that's the whole point of it.
Yep. We're outside. And some of those unique non-traditional sports and putting them all together and seeing how we can do it. And some of the kids are pretty inspirational from what, I mean, they were extraordinarily fast on a bike and to see them swim and to see how they can do it and just overall fitness and being outside and having a great time and closing down some streets so you can ride a bike and run through Riverside Park is pretty cool.
So again, that is coming up here in a little over a month from now, but registration is open right now.
Well, registration's open now and we do offer the clinics that'll start up in about 2 weeks. And those, if you register as part of the triathlon, if you're registered for it, those clinics are free. But if you're just looking to try and see if this is something you're interested in,
okay,
there's a $5 charge to the clinic.
All right. Very good. And again, more information on the YMCA's website. We have that linked up. Let's see here. Speaking of swimming, the Riverside pool is open, obviously. And we've already had some days that have been, you know, absolutely fantastic to be in the pool, even a couple of free days because of the extreme conditions. But there's still opportunity to get like season passes and all of that.
There is, and actually season passes are available, but I'm glad we're talking today, Chris, because this Saturday is one of our community days. So it is a free entrance this Saturday from 12 to 6 p.m. It's free to the community to come in and enjoy the pool. We plan these things a few months in advance. Never know what the weather's going to be like. It looks like it'll be a little bit. It keeps getting better each day from the forecast. Earlier this week, it was supposed to be around 67, 68 degrees. Now it's about 77, forecasted for Saturday, but, it's free to the community. You can come hang out, be at the pool, and that, so that was a planned free day, as compared to last week. But that was a good community day for everybody as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our season passes are still available. There's still plenty of time this summer. Our swim lessons, our Greg Schrader swim lessons that happen at 10:30 every morning, Monday through Thursday. We have two more sessions of those coming up. Registration's available now for that. And so you can go on and register and take care of those. And those are $5 a swim lesson for anybody in Hancock County. So it's a really good thing that we have going there. But it was, it's been fantastic. The weather has made people come out and be a little bit more active in the pool. But the water's finally warm. It was 72 degrees yesterday. So it'll be good. Come out and join us for the rest of the summer. Because I think my boys and I kind of calculated they got about 8 weeks left until school starts back up. And not that anybody's counting so far. But
making sure you maximize every day, maximize your time there. Yeah. And you can get those, online. You have to get them at the pool or at the Y. How does that work, by the way?
No, you can either or. You can come down to either branch and grab them, or you can purchase it online.
Okay.
When you come to the pool, we'll be able to look your name up and verify that you have that season pass.
Okay.
And then that's it. But no, you can purchase them online or in person.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's been, and once they're used, three visits pays for itself.
Yeah.
After that, you're just, it's worth its weight in gold.
Yeah. And while we're on the subject of youth, want to talk about youth sports. You've got camps coming up. Give us all of the details on this here real quickly too.
We have our camps going on currently right now. Registration is ongoing for that for the rest of the summer for our traditional day camp. But then our fall soccer registration is open up right now. We moved, so instead of having it by age, it's now by grades. So a little bit easier for parents to register that way. Mm-hmm. And so you don't no longer have to figure out if you're U five, if that means, well, my son's five, does that mean he plays in that division? You don't have to do that anymore. We're going by grades.
By grades, yeah.
And then the final push for T-ball registration is this week as well. T-ball registration, so we play from mid-July to mid-August. Play twice a week, no weekends. And everybody gets out and gets dirty, really low pressure environment. And you play in the dirt and you get to learn a little bit of T-ball and baseball at the same time. And so it would be, but yeah, that registration, that one's going to close up in about a week. So okay. It would be, if you're a parent out there thinking about what to do with your kid for the rest of the summer, now would be the time to register for that. But fall soccer registration is also going and
okay.
Take care of it now so that you, when August comes around and you keep putting this off until August, but then yeah. We got back to school, we got all this other stuff and it gets crazy and it gets busy. And then you're calling the Y asking in September. if we have space.
Exactly. And you were mentioning it's only 8 weeks. So you may not be thinking about that right now, but sign up for the fall sports is upon us. So again, all of the information on all of this stuff, including the youth triathlon and everything else going on at the Findlay YMCA website, we've got it linked up at goodmornings.net. Once again, Jerry McNamee from the Findlay Family YMCA with us this morning. Thanks for the update. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. See you, buddy.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Thanks to all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, again, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. And if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would also appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, we often talk about the importance of saving for retirement, right? But new research shows that even those who have spent decades saving freeze up when it comes time to actually spend that money. So what are we saving it for? Plus, a look at Amazon's best books of 2026 so far. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.